Welcome back. The Mark Steiner Show is made possible by the University of Maryland's Inflammatory Bowel Disease Program, a multidisciplinary care service dedicated to relieving symptoms and improving the quality of life for IBD patients. For more information, call 1-800-492-5538. I am joined here for the first part of this hour by Lamar Tyler, co-producer, director, and writer of Happily Ever After, A Positive Image of Black Marriage, and Michelle, the indie mom of comedy. The film Happily Ever After will be shown tomorrow night, Thursday, October 29th, at the Senator Theater at 7 p.m. The doors open. Showtime is 7:30, and it is free. And I would suggest you come and bring any young people you have to see this film, as long and other people as well. 410-319-8888 is the number here. We'd like you to join this conversation or write to us at steinershow@gmail.com. And especially to talk about what I've raised here. I mean, I'm curious, Lamar and Michelle, I mean, just your take on what I posited, which is, I mean, where do you go when you know that there's this new image, which is a big part of your film, the Obamas, and what they say to families in general, but black families in particular, sure, about the future? You look at the power of the black family through so many years of American history, its destruction over the last 40 years in America, become the one ethnic culture in America that has the most common thing you find, uncommon thing you find, is marriage, and where we go from here. Lamar, let me just start and then go to Michelle.
Sure. I mean, I think we have to do things like this movie and things like, you know, what's happening tomorrow night at the Senate with a panel discussion we're having following, you know, and talking and try to figure out ways to kind of correct some of these issues we have going on today. You know, you talked about the Obamas, and, you know, the thing that's crazy about that, and we kind of pointed out in the film, is that, you know, before the Obamas, you know, if you walked up to most people, you know, regardless of race or ethnic background in America, and asked them, you know, to name a successful, you know, black family, a lot of them would have said the Huxtables. You know, Huxtables weren't even a real family,
right.
You know, and that show was on 20 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, I mean, what about, you know, maybe, you know, Will and Jada, some celebrity couple, but, I mean, you figure, you know, there was another, you know, very powerful black man a few years before Obama walking around in the White House, Colin Powell. You know, I mean, what about him and his wife? Or, I mean, so, you know, a lot of it goes to, like I said, we talk about images just so much, and what we have kind of like two schools of thought with people that kind of come to our website. And some of them are saying that, you know, I know this exists because I've been raised in a two-parent household. My grandparents were together for a long time, so this is nothing new to me. But, you know, we have, you know, other folks who say that, you know, you know, my mother was a single parent, her mother was a single parent, and
right,
my grandmother was a single parent. So, you know, I've never really seen marriage. And, you know, even though we had someone say, you know, even though I'm engaged, I'm afraid to death of getting married because I've never seen a successful marriage in front of me. So, you know, I mean, I think that's kind of, you know, some of the things we have to do, like I said, is put the images out there and kind of talk about and kind of devise a plan to get the family back together.
Before you go to Michelle, I said to Mark Clark on the way over here on the phone that there was one other show on television that had a strong black family in it. It was a comedy, but it wasn't an upper middle class family. It was a working class family, and that was the show Rock.
Exactly.
You remember?
Yeah, true. Yeah.
She
true,
was
yeah.
a nurse, and he was a garbage collector. Remember that? That was also a very strong family, though.
True. Exactly.
You know? Oh, you were going to say, Michelle? I'm sorry.
Yeah. No, I was gonna kind of echo that, Mark. That was a powerful couple, in my opinion, because it showed more. Baltimore's always been a working class city.
Right.
To mirror a working class couple and the success of Rock to this day, if you talk to Mr. Dutton, he'll tell you that he was very adamant about the images that were going to be depicted on Rock, and so much so that it led in some ways to a lot of conflict. But to this day, that's the average African-American family here in Baltimore City. I mean, you got the folks who've been all their lives, they were lifers over at Bethlehem Steel, they were lifers over
right.
at Domino Sugar Company.
Procter & Gamble.
Yeah,
right.
Procter, they were lifers. And their wives and husbands, they may have been lifers at MTA, and it goes on and on and on. But I just wanted to go back to something you said about the image of the Obamas. Not that it's so unusual to us meaning those of us who, it's kind of amazing to me how And the dialogue about black families and black marriages. Sometimes I think we take for granted, and I don't want to disrespect the institution of marriage, but there's been a lot of common law marriages that have stood the test of time.
Oh yes.
I mean, there are
right.
people who've been together for 30 and 40 years and never consummated it with a document, and the belief was that if they did legally do it, it would all fall to pieces. I think we should also celebrate the unions that were not institutionalized, not so much celebrating them you know, bucking the system, but celebrating the fact that inside of that, you know, relationship, they still saw a need to be true to one another. And I want to celebrate that as well. I come from a family who've had marriages, and we've had what we call common law marriages. We've even given colloquial terms like baby mama, you know, it goes on and on and on. But I think for me, it's about the commitment to one person. It's about the building of a family together and instilling values in them. And I think if you peel back some of these layers, you'll see that on a daily basis. And again, it doesn't always look like the Obamas, but it sure is refreshing to see a black man with a sister who ain't passing. And I meant to say that. She's not passing for anything else but a sister. When you look at her, you're not going to mistake her for someone from Sri Lanka or from Puerto Rico. You're going to see her as someone, not disrespect those places, but you know that's a sister. And her mama is a sister. You know this is a sister because she moved her mama with her to the White House. So it just celebrates,
but,
you know.
But
go ahead, Mark.
I just want to, I'm going to get some calls in here before we have to take a break and go to the next topic we're going to talk about. But I really want to also explore it with our callers as well just now, just where it goes from here. What rebuilds what has been destroyed? I mean, that's because it's so important to happen. 410-319-8888, Renee, you're on the air. Renee, you there?
Oh, I'm sorry. Hi. Good evening, everyone. I think this is really a great conversation, a great topic. I also listened last night to the show, and if I had a babysitter, if my husband and I had a babysitter, we would probably be able to come out tomorrow.
No, please bring your child with you. We're asking folks to please bring their children.
It's okay
as well.
To bring a 3-year-old.
Yes, it is.
Okay.
I'm bringing my 2.5-year-old, my 5.5-year-old, and my 8-year-old. So
hello.
It's going to be a party.
All right.
And we will be there. I did want to say, though, I think that I think it's great to have the images out. However, the lack of black marriages or the images of black marriages is really a systemic issue. I think one of the reasons why we did not see, why we start to see the
Renee, did we lose you? What happened?
Oh, man.
Is she still there? Is she still there? Or is she gone?
Hello?
Yeah, you're there, Renee. Okay.
Oh, I'm sorry. I think this is really great. I think one of the issues, though, there's many extenuating circumstances as to why we don't see these positive images of black families. And I think one of the issues is that around the 60s and 70s, you had the emergence of crack cocaine within the community. And we all know that substance abuse is a killer of interpersonal relationships, and I think that is always been a big issue. And then we kind of, you know, move into today where we have more and more young black men behind bars, and so we don't have men for women to marry. So I think that's also an issue. And the other issue I think also is a systemic issue where black families are not encouraged, especially if you're poor. If you are receiving subsidy or any type of assistance, it actually benefits you to be a single parent. Sure. And I've seen it time and time again where there are women who and men who are living together, quote-unquote common law, but will not make it official with a document because they're afraid they're going to lose the resources that they so desperately need for their families.
We only have a few minutes left before we have to take a break, and I want to let our guest kind of respond to what you were saying.
Well, you know, this is Lamar. You know, I'd say, you know, she's absolutely right. You know, some of those are systemic problems. You know, the deal with drugs, to deal with, you know, the government, you know, telling people if you need public assistance that, you know, it can't be, you can't have a husband and a working male, you know, in the household with you, I know. But, you know, like I said, I think, you know, to kind of address some of those things, I think we really have to just start getting to the youth and, like I said, you know, letting them know that marriage is an option, you know, letting them know that some of the benefits of being married, you know, letting them know that, you know, I mean, this when you have a child alone, you know, I had someone that is a very young single mother, and she was talking about how hard it is, to, you know, to have a child raised on her own, you know. And my thing was, it's hard for two people, you know, a husband and a wife. So yes, it's very hard, you know. It's even worse for, you know, a single mother than you throw in the fact that, you know, she was, you know, her youth, and on top of that. So I think we just really had to work with that generation and start trying to change their mindset, like Michelle was saying before, about the way, you know, we just view marriage in general.
I wonder, though, Michelle and Lamar, before we have to go to break here to our next segment, if part of it is also that in America today, what happened in the 60s to now is that is that there was a, while integration and segregation ended, and a huge amount of a percentage of the black world ended up in jobs and working and moving into the middle class in America, a huge segment of black America was left behind and never got out.
Right.
And that's what the crux of this is. And those people who got left out are people whose parents might have worked at Bethlehem Steel or might have worked at someplace, and the jobs left. And when the jobs left, families fell apart. And when families fell apart, there was a welfare system. The welfare system said you can't have your dad in the house or you're going to lose your welfare. And everything started kind of coming apart. I mean,
yeah.
And I think there's a root to it. So in some ways, more than just a social kind of answer, there's also got to be an economic answer.
There definitely has to be an economic answer. And I think, you know, a lot of the initiatives that are coming forth even right now out of this new administration that kind of encourage, you know, even working class folks to live their dream of entrepreneurship. I think that, you know, when a black man feels like he is contributing to his household, when he feels like what he does deserves a dollar sign connected to it, whether you're a barber, whether you're a mason, you know, whether you do masonry, whatever your craft is, if you can parlay that to something that will sustain you and you can work independently, that also encourages, in my opinion, relationships. Because I think when you meet someone and they buy into your dream, then together you build something. And this whole economic piece is major, and I think it is one of the nemesis for black marriages as well, because when brothers aren't working, brothers don't want to be connected to a sister who may be working and may be working a job that pays twice as much as he does.
Because if you have money, you may be more inclined to take care of your children.
And not only that, it's an esteem issue as well, Mark.
Right,
You know that. I mean, a brother likes, my grandfather used to work every day. He liked coming home with dirt under his nails. It did something for him. We used to sit and watch him in front of a bucket every Friday night with a bag of Utz potato chips and another thing you don't need to know. But he would sit there, and he would put his hands in this bucket, and he would clean the dirt under his nails. And it was our way of saying, Granddaddy is the provider. He takes care of Grandma and all nine kids and us two grands. So it's also an esteem thing for a man. And then you have a woman who holds you up and, you know, has that dinner ready for you when you come home. And it sounds antiquated, but at the end of the day, you ask anybody and they'll tell you that that's what they're missing. That's what they want. They want that teamship. They want that partnership. And that's what we need to promote when we talk about black marriages.
Michelle, you have had the last word on this subject only for today, though.
I'm sorry, Lamar.
But I two things I want to say is, A, everybody, encourage everyone to Thursday night, tomorrow night, October 29th, go to the Senator Theater, 5904 York Road, right by York and Belvedere. Doors open at 7 p.m., showtime at 7:30. The film Happily Ever After, Positive Image of a Black Marriage, will be there. Michelle and Mark Clark will be part of a panel discussion after the film. Lamar Tyler, who made the film, will be there as well as many others. So I encourage you to really flock to this and create a community discussion that maybe can grow beyond itself. And Lamar Tyler, thank you so much for making the movie and joining us today.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Michelle, great to talk to you.
Thank you, Mark, so much for having me.
And we will do another discussion for a longer period of time on this issue with some of the folks who are in this movie and with Lamar Tyler and others. And it's just great to have you both here. And thank you so much for making this film. We're going to take a very short break. I'll remind you that the Mark Steiner Show is brought to you by MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, offering a full range of financial services. MeQ was formed in 1936 to help people during the Great Depression. And over 70 years later, they're still here to help people during difficult times. More information is available at MECU.com. We'll be right back with a different segment, moving to the world of hip-hop. Stay with us. Welcome back. I'm Mark Steiner. We are joined in studio right now by Timothy Cooper, co-director of a film called Paused in Time. We're also joined by folks who are in the film that make up part of this community as well. Joshua Lynn is with us, co-produced Paused in Time. Ak is with us, host of Strictly Hip Hop right here on WEAA every Friday night from midnight to 5 a.m. That is a long shift.
Yeah. definitely.
But a good shift.
For sure.
It's a good shift.
For sure.
And Tiana's with us as well, who is a news host on Strictly Hip Hop. So these folks stay up all night long to bring you that show.
Yes. all night long.
Good to have all four of you, Louis. Welcome, welcome.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Matthew Cooper, who couldn't join us today, is also a co-director of the film, has written me many emails back and forth about his film, and he sent it to me and watched it again last night, all the way through again to get ready for today. And this film, should we play a little clip from this film to give people a sense of a little sound that comes from the film, and we'll jump into the conversation.
Check us out. Yeah. I was born where the push is at. Burn is where the bush is at. To set you up for money, bait you with the pussycat. Homies holding down the block. Always got them hammers caught. Quick to holler, shut it down when they see them city cops.
The reason ain't about going mainstream yet and be more is because it's like it's not enough support, yo. It's like everybody out here get signed. And it's like, forget. They from Baltimore. Beef turns cats vegetables. This a lesson for you. Yeah, there's always weapons to use. And if a problem pop off, we pointing weapons at you. So get the step in the two. Gonna fly from the hammer. My closest friends will probably die in a slammer.
They scared to come out here. Niggas say they go to D.C. quick. Man. But they skip over Baltimore. Like, I look at it like this, man. If niggas want it, it's out here to get. You gotta be hungry, man. Niggas want it, you gotta make it happen.
Welcome back. So, one of the things that was amazing to me about this film is films are always shot and done from the outside in. So, I mean, it's always somebody looking down on an inner city neighbor, looking down on it, having a sociological study from the outside and looking in.
No doubt.
But this was a conversation from the inside out, which is what was so amazing. Tell me about how you all got started making this film.
Well, it started really, you know.
We Timothy bought, Cooper.
Yeah. We bought, you know, it was an HD camera with a simple editing program, and we wanted to make a music video. And that turned into, you know, wanted to document the whole Baltimore hip-hop scene because we were going to a lot of shows. We were really trying to get heavy into, you know, that environment. And seeing, you know, different depictions of our city in the media, on TV. You know, we wanted to give a different side because everybody knows the side of, you know, the murder rate, you know, the drug activity and all that. So it's a lot of artistic people in Baltimore, not just in music, but, you know, in the arts and culture and things like that. But we wanted to show the musical side, the artistic side, you know, from the guys in the quarter to the people in the club to the people actually recorded studio albums. It's a lot of talent here. We wanted to give that side of it.
And how did you get involved in the film?
I mean, well, we all family, so, you know, our mothers are sisters.
Uh-huh.
So we basically just, you know, put our resources together. Like he said, we wanted to shoot a video. Like, I rap myself, and, mm-hmm. you know, they were shooting a video for me. So I basically, you know, I mean, we basically just pulled our resources together, just got together and just basically, you know, put the film
together. You didn't take film course. You never studied the stuff. You just did it.
Pretty much.
Right. So, and one of the things you said in the film, which I found really interesting, was is that in this city, there's no outlet, like media outlet, really, for hip hop that comes out of this community to the large community, other than one of the few places is right here.
Yeah, strictly hip hop.
Mm-hmm. Strictly hip hop. Talk about that, Ak.
Well, it's. You know, that's been like tradition as far as the show. Even before I got there, the city, probably just like any other like city, like, you know, with a nice size population, like hip hop is like within the fabric because hip hop is something for inner city, you know, kids to do to keep from doing something else negative. So that's what we latch on to, hip hop. So of course, Baltimore, you know, we're going to embrace that culture as well. So with Strictly Hip Hop, it's always been around, you know, because we're here and that's something that we can do. Why not do it? Show some support to those, the community that we, you know, that we serve, that we bring music to. How about take some music from them and let's share?
Why do you think that media, especially most radio stations, are scared of their own hip-hop, are scared of what comes out of the community?
I think that a lot of times when someone is making a song, they might make it for Baltimore. And if it's just for Baltimore, then people other places can't relate to it. Now, for club music, for instance, you know, club music was like a craft that people created here, and that's what Baltimore is known for. Every other
it's
place
created here in Baltimore, is it unique to Baltimore?
It's unique to Baltimore,
really?
Yeah. and it's something that doesn't sound like anything else, and it's created to where other people can embrace it. But people tend to make songs for just here or albums for just Baltimore.
So this town's always been accused of being kind of parochial and like insulated and insular, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, inside of itself and almost afraid to get out, always in this shadow between Philadelphia and D.C. and like.
Well, actually, to piggyback off of T, like with club music, I don't really think it was particularly made for like. For other people to embrace. I think it was still that same thing. Like, we making it for us. It's just that because the sound is different,
mm-hmm.
other people started like, what is this? And then, you know, with Morgan in particular, you got, you know, students coming from Philly, from Texas, from wherever, and they get here and they like, I never heard this before. You know, so.
What is it they hadn't heard before?
The club music.
So how is it different from what they did?
How's it different?
Yeah.
Because club is different from hip-hop. Club is like a subset within hip-hop culture. Club music is like for dance.
Mm-hmm.
Hip-hop is a little more to it, like telling stories and, you know, conveying messages, more about the words. But club is strictly the beat, the rhythm, and the dance, the movement to it. That's pretty much. And people, like, because that's something unique to hear. People from out of town, they automatically put us within that, like, oh, well, that's what y'all do. That's y'all thing right there. I mean, it is. It is. You know, but some people disagree. Some people agree. Well, okay, is that something we should take full blast and run with it? That's how we're going to get recognition. Or it's like, well, I don't really want to do club. I want to do what I was already doing, and still get equal respect. I think that's what the tug of war kind of is.
And that's part, Joshua and Timothy, that you were doing this film, was that tug of war.
Yeah, basically. Yeah. I mean, it's just like he was saying, it's just like D.C. and go-go. It's like, you know, it's
there
like Baltimore
mm-hmm.
and, you know, club music. It's hand in hand. That's the box that they put us in. And mm-hmm. since we really haven't had any artists to really break out of Baltimore and, you know, show our scene for, you know, what it really is, I mean, until we have that, that's the box that we will be put in.
But I think it's on the artists also, because it's a way, it has to be a way that these artists can implement this specific sound. I know a lot of these artists don't specifically like that we link to club music, but we can use that to our advantage. It's like a Wale used go-go to his advantage. Just like Washington D.C.-based producer Rich Harrison, who produced A. Marie, this one thing, he used that go-go to his advantage. So we get a producer or artist who could use the club music to their advantage, implemented to their style of hip-hop, then that's one way that we could get on the map also. Well, you know, pertaining to hip-hop music.
So that, two questions. I was thinking that, you know, like, when I was growing up, Baltimore was a club town then too, but it was different style of music. It was soul music, it was R&B or whatever, but it was also a club scene, but different. So the club scene has just kind of grown into hip-hop, and it's still like the Baltimore thing.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's the dance. I mean, all right, the same people that would embrace hip-hop culture, right? They're like the same people that would go out to, like, well, it was back in the days, not here anymore, but like, Hammer Jacks.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? And, like, in Hammer Jacks, they're going to, you know, there's a portion, maybe not even a portion of the night, but there's a portion of the club where they're just going to play hip-hop. And then you go to another portion, we playing club. That's what it is. Or they'll mix it up. All right, we're going to play some hip-hop, and then we're going to go into some club. So ultimately, I guess that just evolved into, okay, well, since it's the hip-hop kids that's down here anyway, you know, it's a part of hip-hop. We dance. We dance to hip-hop. You throw the club on, we're going to dance to that. And then you got some artists, like what the brothers were saying, that, okay, we're going to try to figure out a way where we can mesh the two together. All right, so you had like somebody like a Boss Man and his producer, Rod Lee, who would take a club track and slow it down slow enough for Boss Man to rap over.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, for those people who are, you know, in tune with club, like, oh, that's club beat. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? So that was a way to flip and bounce it. Then you got this cat, D.O.G.
These were all in the film. These guys, he was in the film.
Well, they right? speak about it, right, yeah, right. in the yeah. film. And like D.O.G. and Black Star, when Black Star, he had it popping with the club real heavy. D.O.G. and Black Star, like, they got together and made a club hip hop record, you know? But since it's rap in it, it's all considered hip hop.
Well, I'm going to take a short break and come back and continue the discussion. I wish we had some sounds we could play back to back. People could hear the difference between
the example.
Yeah.
Between the two. 410-319-8888 is the number here. We're talking about this conversation inspired by the film Paused in Time, made by Matthew Cooper, Timothy Cooper, Joshua Lynn. Timothy and Joshua in the studio along with Ak and T from Strictly Hip Hop here, WEAA. 410-319-8888 is the number here. And Urbanite Radio Stories on the Mark Steiner Show are made possible by Baltimore Mediation, the first mediation firm in the state of Maryland specializing in separation and divorce and business and workplace conflicts. Located right here in Baltimore at www.baltimoremediation.com. We'll be right back. Welcome back. I'm Mark Steiner. We're talking about the film Paused in Time, made by Matthew Cooper, Timothy Cooper, and Joshua Lynn. Timothy Cooper and Joshua Lynn are in the studio. It's a film from the community out, from the street out, about hip-hop culture in this town. And it's unique. I mean, I've never seen a film like this before in my life when I watched it. I mean, because you don't, as I said earlier, you always see films from the outside in. You never see films from the inside out. And that's what the power of this film is. Ak and Tia with us. Ak, of course, is host of Strictly Hip Hop here every Friday night from midnight to 5 a.m. And he can be heard hosting the news on Strictly Hip Hop. 410-319-8888 is the number here. Let's go right to the phones, and then we'll come back to where we left off.
Okay.
And 410-319-8888, Kevin, you're on the air.
How you doing? I just picked up on what you were talking about. I guess I would kill myself the old school. I grew up on DC Go-Go, which is another unique music form originating in the streets of Washington, D.C. But one thing I noticed about Baltimore is, which I'm glad the club music came along, but Baltimore now had its own unique sound. But Baltimore had kind of a unique style of music, even going back to like the early 80s. And this club called O'Dell's, they were playing. It was club music, but it was more like a European type sound to it, you know, and it wasn't a Chicago thing. It wasn't a house music. It was a unique sound. And, you know, we used to come to Baltimore and say, you know, and go to O'Dell's and say, man, it's just a different style of music, club music they playing in Baltimore. So people from all over the coast used to go to O'Dell's, you know, just to hear that unique club music. But then, you know, as things went along, like your brother just said, you know, they started to infuse kind of the hip hop sound in with that club. I don't know if Frank Ski, you know, had anything to do with that or not. You know,
You know,
Frank Ski brought that like Miami type sound to it. And it's a little bit of everything. When I hear it now, and I'm a little older now, but when I hear that, you know, kind of like a Miami beat a little bit, and a little bit of the old European club sound that the Baltimore was famous for mixed in, man. You know, I say much props to Baltimore, you know, as far as the young cats and what they, you know, doing with the music. But don't forget about Go-Go, Mark, man. You might need to do a whole nother show on that, man.
You just might. You might have to just do a history of hip-hop from beginning to end, segments all the way through the year.
Okay, man.
Okay. And I remember O'Dell's.
You remember O'Dell's?
Very well. I'm old enough that my oldest kids hung at Odell's.
Okay. Okay.
But see, I'm older than all y'all, so that's it. Okay. So what about what Kevin was saying?
Oh, well, he's right. I mean, it evolved, and now what you have going on, like he was saying, it was like earlier on with club, it was like he said, like the techno, you know, really fast, you know, but then as it, you know, evolved on and time passed, like people started to slow it down, slow enough to be able to rap over, you know. At first it was like chants, and then as the years went by, then it like, okay, I'm gonna do a verse, kind of like what how hip hop started, really. Because really, hip hop, the DJ would put like a disco record on,
right,
and chant over it just to get the crowd hype. And then it got to be where as though, you know what, I think I can just let the break run. I think I can go the whole disco break. And then it just kept going from there. And club music kind of evolved into the same thing.
Right.
A lot of old school hip hop heads, I'm sorry.
No, go ahead, man.
But a lot of old school Baltimore hip hop heads, it's funny he mentioned Frank Ski.
Yeah.
Now, when we talk about this tug of war, a lot of the old school hip hop Baltimore heads say it's Frank's fault that we're paused in time with that cut. Like, we're not going to let it go because Frank came with this called Doo Doo Brown.
Yeah,
he came with that.
That was it.
And then that's what started it, and that's what it ended.
Paused in time. So let's talk about the title.
Well, it's a title that actually my brother came up with. It just means basically that for the time, it was 2007 when we started on this film. And, you know, the whole situation with Nas, the hip-hop artist Nas saying that hip-hop is dead. And, you know, a lot of people coming, you know, coming in on the culture of hip-hop saying that it's sold out and things of that nature. So he was basically saying we agreed that it's stuck. It's not essentially dead, that it's kind of stuck, that we need to kind of progress forward and kind of expand on our horizons, basically. And if we don't do that, then it's a, you know, slight chance that the culture could die. Okay. But that's never going to happen because it's too many creative people contributing to the culture. So that'll never happen, that the culture will die.
And in your film, when you did it, you took it across the city.
Yeah.
And it seems like you took it across over at least a year because it looked like there were winter scenes and summer scenes.
Yeah, about a year and a half, almost.
A year and a half?
Just working on it.
So, I mean, what is, for somebody who sees this film from outside, what do you think it says to them? I'm asking that question. I should be answering that question myself, because in some senses, it's outside for me. Because though I like hip-hop and listen to it, it's not the music of, like, my generation. It's not where with the sound that we made, well, I would play, it doesn't come from
right.
What we started, but it's. But when I watched hip hop, I picked up a CD called Festival in the Desert, which is this festival in Mali that takes place every year, and they have African artists and Europeans as well, and Americans, but mostly African artists from all over the continent come, and it's an amazing festival. And then I was kind of listening to these young Senegalese and Algerian hip hop artists, and Parisian hip hop artists. And from London, and it's just amazing how they took the sounds of their culture, and it's embedded inside hip hop, and it's this blend.
Mm.
It's like hip hop is like really taking over the globe as a culture.
Yeah.
You know,
right.
It's just everywhere.
It's multicultural.
Yeah.
Anybody can adapt to it. Anybody can adjust to it. I mean, just about anybody can relate to it. I mean, whether you live in Africa, you struggling. I mean, you know, somebody. You can just take their story and just, you know, basically take out a couple parts and put in a couple parts of yours, and they just basically told you, you know, your own life story without even ever meeting you or knowing you, you know, your struggles or what you're going through and things of that nature. Like,
there's I don't know if you've heard this. I had a young woman on the show here a few months back, and actually I'm trying to get to meet these people coming in now that she's bringing in. Her name is Abir, and she's Palestinian. And there's this whole hip-hop culture that grew up out of the West, the occupied territories, and inside of Israel proper where Palestinians live and in Gaza. And they have this hip-hop culture that's just amazing. I mean, it's just, and what to them it says, it speaks to their rebellion and their saying, we want freedom, we want to be able to be.
But hip hop is really about freedom of expression. It's not really just, it's not all boiling down to music. It's just like the brother said, just feeling free and another person relating to whatever it is you're going through. But it's not just the music. It's the way you dress, is what you wear, how you wear your hair, how you carry yourself, how you feeling. It's all of that. It's a culture. It's not just the music. It's way, way beyond that. Because if it was, if it wasn't, then a lot of people from other places wouldn't be able to relate to it the way that they can.
And they do.
They do.
I mean,
they definitely do.
I mean it's like, to me, it's like the next black culture in America has affected the entire planet.
Yeah.
But it's from, whether it's heard through like jazz, R&B, soul, hip hop, whatever that genre period of history is, and this is just the next development.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But in some ways, it's even more pervasive than all of it.
Yeah. And they said it wasn't going to last, you know, when the Sugar Hill Gang dropped Rappers in Light. They said, oh, this is just a fad. They looked, you know, more than 30 years later. But like she was saying, it's more than just music. I mean, hip hop star is a way to get away from the violence, you know, as you said.
To get away from the violence.
Yeah, in New York, you know, to get away from the gang culture and the killing each other in the street. That's why hip hop was created. And if you look in L.A., with the crump dancers, you know, that movement, the crump dancing movement, that was created as also as, you know, a thing to get away from gang violence. So that, in the same sense, that's how hip hop was created. As a, you know, a relief of sorts from what's going on in the streets, the perils that's going on in the streets.
We have like two tracks queued up to kind of hear the difference between what we're talking about, club music. And but they have queued up is Slide to the Left by K-Swift, right?
Okay.
And then the next one queued up is Land of the Old by Boss Man. So okay. Let's hear these two tracks back to back, and then we'll talk about what we've just heard.
K-Swift. I think they ready, Sheldon. City Spring, oh, East Side, oh, West Side, oh, this the land and the home of the city, this the city where they rock bumps, man, if you're reppin' your City Spring, oh.
So that was Boss Man, Land of the O, and the first cut was Slide to the Left, K-Swift. For the uneducated ear, they go, what? There was a difference?
Uh-huh. Well, like, you know, we was joking behind the scenes with the first track, with the K-Swift track, when the vocalist, you didn't hear the vocals anymore, and you just heard the beat. You know, I was joking with y'all, like, okay, now for the next half an hour in the club, that's all you're going to hear. Just that beat, maybe some nuances and some variations, but it's just going to be that. Whereas, though, with the hip-hop track with Boss Man and them slowing the club track down, I guess he's going to, you know, tell you a story about whatever the track is about and take you from point A to point B, and then that be the end of the song. And that's, like, the difference.
So what is it about the club sound that we heard, like K-Swift in this example, that makes it so hard to take off beyond the bounds of Baltimore? I mean, what is it about that sound that is it that different and parochial wouldn't catch to somebody who's listened to it in L.A. or Chicago or Miami or Philly?
Man, I just think when you hear something different, a lot of times, you know, people seem to, you know, stay away from different. People usually stay in the box on what they really listen to. You know what I'm saying? If you're a hip-hop fan, you're going to listen to hip-hop. I mean, vice versa, whatever, you know, your genre may be. But like I said, this is Baltimore born, raised, and Baltimore based. So a lot of people, they really not going to relate to it. I mean, if you keep hearing it, you know, just like any song on the radio. At first, you might don't like it, but you keep hearing that song right. over and over and over again. You find yourself singing that song. You know, you don't really like it. It's just, you know, I think it's just really getting familiar with it. You know what I'm saying? Like hearing it more than just that one time. You know, actually listening, analyzing, you know.
What are you going to say,
T? I feel like the difference between what we just heard was the boss man, the person that's rapping. If you can't relate to his lyrics, then you're not going to listen to it. K-Swift, he's saying slide to the left. What's the relate to? Mm. If you in the club and you want to dance, what is it the relate to? You're going to slide to the left.
So that's what I'm saying. So why is it
that's a good point.
So why is it that that's so hard to kind of latch on to? Because it would seem to me that, that the club sound we just heard is something that most people could dance to, right?
But well, it's because it goes back to it being a culture. It goes back to it being a culture. With Boss Man saying whatever he's saying in his song, The Land of the Old, then if you can't relate to the words, then you're not going to listen to it. And that would be dependent upon who you are, where you are at in your career, you know, different things, who the people you hang around, what kind of things you like to do. All of that is going to be based on the lyrics, and that's going to depend on whether you listen to it or not. With slide to the left is nothing to be related to. You're out, you know, you having a good time, and you're going to slide to the left, and you're going to dance to that music. You know, that's it.
Well, I think that's why, you know, people can't relate
Timothy Cooper.
To club music for the most part. That's why you see a DJ Class hooking up with Kanye West for the remix of his song. That's why you see Debonair Samir with Swiss Beats remixing his song for a cutoff of his album. So just like T was saying that, club music is more acceptable out of Baltimore because it's more mainstream. People can relate to it, you know what I mean? And that's why Baltimore's really known for the club music more than the mainstream hip hop.
I feel like, I don't mean to cut you off. No, I feel like you can make it your own. You can make whatever your craft is, you can take it where you want to take it. I think that just like the Down South sound, all weekend, first we heard Cash Money, and I don't know if you know these people, but first we heard Cash Money, you look confused.
I know some of them I don't know.
We heard Lil Wayne, heard, you know, BG and Juvenile. The next thing we got Gucci Mane and all these different people. You know, the South made it happen for the South.
Yeah, no doubt.
That's what they did. And a lot of times from here, and I know I'm going off subject, but a lot of times from here, people from here don't support their own artists.
But I mean, because it started in New York and in Brooklyn and moved its way. I mean, and then it was in L.A., then it went to the South. I mean, it really wandered around in terms of who had hold of the
right.
audience in different periods.
Yeah.
But the reason why Baltimore hasn't been able to get where we need to go is because, number one, it's not a lot of support. And number two, people have to think outside of the box and make something your own and push it. It's not going to just come to you. You have to do the legwork. You can't just sit and complain about it. You got to do what you need to do.
I think we have a caller here who wants to comment on that very subject. Let's go to him at 410. Oh, he just left. Caller was going to comment, but he couldn't hold on. 410-319-8888. Call back. We'll get you right on, Dee, what you're about to say. So what do you all listen to outside of the realm of hip-hop? What do you listen to outside of that realm? Anything?
Big Jim. Sorry.
What? What'd you say?
Big Jim.
I love Big Jim show.
I listen to everything. I mean, that's an
I do. It's a good show.
Another point that you can't just listen to hip hop to be successful. You know, you have to listen to U2. You have to listen to Kings of Leon. You know what I mean? You have to listen to Raphael Sadiq to be able to be, you know, to have those creative juices flowing. If you just listen to hip hop all day, then that's stagnant. You know what I mean? You have to listen to different genres to get the creative juices flowing. That's what these artists, you know, a guy like Andre 3000, he's listening to different things. He can't just be listening to hip-hop all day, you know.
Well, when you hear the hip-hop going on around the world, you know that people are listening to all kinds of stuff, and they're blending it into, they're sampling stuff from everywhere.
Yeah.
Or they're coming up with beats and rhythms and ways of performing the music to come out of a lot of different kinds of styles of music, a lot of different cultures.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And that's one of the reasons I think some of the music, the hip-hop music coming out of Europe is so exciting, because it's blending all these things, mm-hmm. you know.
Mm-hmm.
Middle Eastern Arab stuff with different African cultures and African American hip hop and jazz, and it's just kind of it's an amazing new sound.
Yeah, I mean, like with hip hop, it's gone through a lot of different stages. I remember there was a stage in hip hop where Arabic samples were hot.
Right,
you would just take. You don't know what it's saying, but they would take that and use that. I remember when that was hot. There was a time where, okay, we just doing soul samples.
Right. It was a time when rock was hot.
When rock was hot. Yeah. Even with Run DMC.
Right.
With Earl Smith.
Right.
So hip-hop, you know, has always embraced... I guess that's what keeps it going.
Yeah.
That like what he was just saying, like you gotta be able
it's
to
growing.
See what else is going on.
Right.
And hip hop has always taken from what was going on and make it ours. Like a James Brown record, somebody from the street taking a James Brown break and just rapping over the James Brown break. But James Brown is still there. It's his break.
Let me open the phones here. People have called in. Let me get some on the air with us. 410-319-8888. We're talking about the film Paused in Time. Timothy Cooper, Joshua Lynn here in the studio. Co-produced it. Ak and T, who are strictly hip-hop here from midnight until 5 a.m. every Friday, are in the studio as well. 410-319-8888 is the number here. Tony in Baltimore, you're on the air.
Yeah, we were talking about, I hear a lot of talk over there with the hip-hop, some hardcore hip-hop and stuff. And I rep this, you know, as hard as I can. I mean, my brother's making CDs. We're doing our thing. But the thing is, we got to remember, too, when it comes to this culture, with club music and differentiating the difference between that and hip-hop, it's all different sectors of hip-hop, and we're trying to find our way out into more of the mainstream or the hardcore when those things have found their way out, like I was mentioning to the gentleman. 80 Dimes, the Woe Now, is something that, you know, when you listen to the CD, he has other hip-hop, but that one club track took off, and it actually made it to video games and things of that nature. But the main thing I wanted to speak on is that we have to recognize each other as a culture as far as the music in Baltimore. We have to represent better for our own people. We love the music, love the sound, love the artists at the local venue, but we're not trying to pay the money to see them. We're not trying to invest in buying the CDs. We're not even pumping them out of town to our relatives over the phone. Hey, look, we got people here. They hot to death. We're not even doing that. You know, we kind of shrug off our own people. Like 80 Dimes is okay, or so is Boss Man. How about Bob Backlund? I mean, all these cats out here that fire, but ain't getting the treatment. So, yeah, when we speak up and we address that, and we really start repping for our own people and start, you know what I mean, mentioning each other's names, because everybody can't be the only one, then we're going to see a little bit more.
Well, Tony,
shout out to D-Money and everybody else out there representing.
We have a lot of people behind you on the phone now, but I think what you're saying is important. And Timothy Cooper, that was part of what your film was talking about. That was a big piece of your film.
Exactly. I mean, you know, I agree with him wholeheartedly. That's why we got all these guys and reach out to many more people who we weren't, you know, able to get for whatever reason. But that's the whole thing. We wanted to show that we wanted to see these guys, you know, succeed. All of the artists, because there's a lot of talent here. So, and we had two screenings in New York City last month for a new filmmakers film festival in the South Bronx Film Festival. And, you know...
You showed your film up there?
Yeah, twice. And the reception that, you know, they didn't even know that Baltimore had a hip-hop scene, a relevant hip-hop scene. So that was the whole, you know, basis behind this film, to get it out there to the people, to the masses, to the world, basically.
How was your film received?
It was received well. Yeah. Like I was saying, that it was a little surprise. They didn't really know that Baltimore had a hip-hop scene, you know what I mean? A relevant hip-hop scene, that we were doing hip-hop down here, you know? That we had different people contribute to hip-hop.
Let's go back to the phones at 410-319-8888. Connie, you're on the air.
congratulate Joshua and the guys on a great documentary and CD. And I want everybody in Maryland to embrace them.
All right.
Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Constance.
All right.
No, I think it's an important film. I think it's a film that it's a unique film. I mean, I'm telling you, when I watched it, it was just hit me. It was like, I think we need more stuff that comes out of the community as an artistic expression in film, and not the other way around. And that's why I think this is so really unique. You don't see things like this come out.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
And you never went to film school. 410-319-8888 is number here. And can we take more callers here? We got time. Londro, you're on the air. No?
Hello, how you doing, sir?
You're on the air.
I wanted to comment on what they were talking about, the hip-hop and the club music. The thing that I noticed, what the young lady said, is that they don't get the proper support. You know, I'm 39 years old going on 40. I grew up on club music and house music, and I love club, but it seems like now when you go to the club, it's like people are ashamed that they used to like club music and they don't want to dance to it anymore. But club music keeps me in shape, you know what I'm saying? And also, you know, I love to dance, man. I dance so I can't move no more. Club music is the thing that does it, you know. And also what I've noticed too, that, you know, people come to Baltimore and steal from us and don't give back. Like, you know, with the club music, there's a lot of dances that good dancers that are here, you know what I'm saying? And they come and film movies about dance, but don't feature our form of dance here. Not only that, with the hip hop scene, like you said, Bob Backlund, the girl named Silhouette, I think she's one of the baddest female rappers in the game in Baltimore, but nobody.
Well, Lonzo, let me only interrupt only because we have about like 30 seconds left. You want to have a quick comment back?
Yeah, but my.
Yeah, I definitely agree with him. I think the whole thing is just supporting the movement, you know. Not just this film, but anybody who's doing something for Baltimore Hip Hop, you know, we need to support it.
So, what's the website they can go to get your film?
It's www.myspace.com/thankgodforhiphop. The film is also available at the Soundgarden at Fells Point on Thames Street and also at filmbaby.com. And we're also doing a college tour of sorts. We just showed our film at the Black Student Union at Johns Hopkins University, so we're trying to gather some more support for schools in Maryland to show our film also.
Timothy Cooper and Joshua Lynn, thank you so much for your creative venture, Pause in Time. Glad we finally got you all in the air.
Thank you for having me.
It's good to have you both here. And Akinti, great to see you both. Thank you for being on the show today. Thank you for coming in last minute.
Thank you, Mr. Steiner.
And listen to them every Friday night from midnight to 5 a.m. right here on WEAA. The Mark Steiner Show is produced by the Center for Emerging Media. Our producer is Justin Levy. We're engineered by Zachary Coleman. Our interns are Judith Lloyd, Brian Boone, Richard Good, Gay Pinder, and Devin Finley. Theme music by Wal Matthews of Clean Cuts. To hear this show again and podcast any of our past shows, hear new interviews you'll hear nowhere else, visit us on the web at steinershow.org. And for Public Radio, WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community, I'm Mark Steiner. Take care.